Welcome to the Moms in Prayer podcast, a place where we put our finger on the pulse of what's happening in the world today so we can better pray for and equip the next generation. Our focus will always be revival and spiritual awakening in our children, our schools, and our motherhood. We're so glad you're here with us. Let's get started. Welcome to the Moms in Prayer podcast. I'm your host, Leenie Heiss, and this is episode 76. You guys, we are snowed in Michigan this week, and we're supposed to be doing fall. It's a winter wonderland before Thanksgiving. How are you incorporating Thanksgiving into your family's November? And if you're an American, how are you incorporating Thanksgiving into your Thanksgiving celebrations? By the way, do you know that each week we have friends listening from countries all over the world? Of course we do, because Moms in Prayer is in 146 countries around the world and growing every day. Today's guest is Kate Battistelli. Kate is an author, speaker, and mother to Christian recording artist Francesca Battistelli, and we love them both. Kate is a woman who invests in other women and is honest about the struggles of walking this planet. Today, you will hear her journey that includes an abortion that closed her womb. It's not graphic, but it is an extremely important conversation. I can't wait for you to listen in. Just a reminder before we get started, you can find today's show notes, ways to connect online with today's guests, books, and the things that we talk about on the blog at momsinprayer.org. Also, thank you for your giving last week and your partnership in furthering the vision of Moms in Prayer. Let's welcome Kate to the podcast. Well, Kate Battistelli, welcome to the Moms in Prayer podcast.
Thank you for having me, Lee.
I love getting to see you again, friend. We were just talking about how long it's been since we've seen each other in person, but this is fun too. You're a podcaster and a wife and a mom and an author and a speaker, and you do all the things. But just in case your name isn't familiar to our audience, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Well, I'm Kate Battistelli. And, you know, as you said, I'm a mom and a wife. I have one daughter, Francesca Battistelli. So if you listen to Christian music, you've probably heard of her. If you don't, look her up because she's amazing. She's got four kiddos, pregnant with her fifth, due in January, which is super exciting because I was only able to have one child. So she's an only. But, you know, I just tell her, keep them coming. Don't stop. She's my only shot I have at grandchildren. But that's a whole nother season. I mean, we could do a whole podcast just on grandparenting because that's an amazing thing that I never really kind of imagined in my life. But here it is.
I love that. Here it's a reward. Like if you survive parenting, then maybe God will give you grandchildren. So I know that's so fun. What do the grandkids call you?
I'm Mimi. And my husband is Poppy. I think it's the Norwegians that say grandchildren are life's dessert. And I love that because it's what it's like. You know, it's just like this wonderful, it's like the best part of the meal, you know, is what do I get for dessert? So it's the best part of the day when they come over, or when I get to see them. It's really a neat time of life.
It's such a gift. And I have gotten to meet your husband, Mike, and he is wonderful as well. How did you meet Mike?
We fell in love and met across the footlights. It's kind of a neat story. Back in the early 80s, I was an actress in New York wanting to be a Broadway star and win a Tony and all that stuff. And this is before I knew the Lord, because I was 26 at the time, didn't come to know the Lord till I was 29. But I went out as the understudy for this big Broadway national tour of The King and I, starring Yul Brynner. And if you're too young, you won't know who he is. But if you've ever seen the movie of The King and I or seen The Ten Commandments, he was Pharaoh in Ten Commandments in the original King back in 1954, which is just like amazing to me.
Which, by the way, they must watch. If they have not, they must go figure that out because he's phenomenal.
He's phenomenal. It's one of the best musical comedies in history. So, I mean, it's just a wonderful, uplifting story that your kids can watch safely with you. So anyway, they were casting this big Broadway national tour of The King and I, and I was 26, and I went out for the part of the understudy for the leading lady, and I got the part, which was great. But, you know, when you're an understudy, a lot of people don't realize you're really just an insurance policy for the producers. You don't expect that in a part that big, you don't expect you're going to really get to go on, because most leading ladies are not going to allow the understudy to go on. Well, in my case, about 2 months into the run of the show, I come into the theater around 7:15 for an 8 o'clock show. And this is 1981, no cell phones, no computers. You can't get a hold of someone during the day if they're not home. So I was out with my girlfriend shopping and come into the theater at 7:15, and the stage manager sees me come in the door and runs to me, grabs me by the shoulders and says, "She's sick, you're on." So I had 45 minutes to get ready to go whistle a happy tune. And you learn very quickly in those moments that sometimes you just have to do it afraid, you know, because I was terrified. Here's this gigantic star. I'm a, you know, a young actress with not that much experience going out to do this huge role. So I went out and did it and ended up doing it for 2 weeks. And then the leading lady came back to the show and I went back to the chorus because that's what you do. But interestingly, about 2 months later, the producer called me one day to say she and Yul Brynner just did not get along very well. They really didn't like working with each other. So they had bought out her 2-year contract and were offering me, who is a nobody, the part of a lifetime. And I mean, you know, how could you say no to that? It was just a wonderful experience. I did almost 3 years on tour all around the U.S., about 1,000 performances with Yul Brynner. But during that time, my husband joined the tour as the associate conductor because he was a trumpet player, conductor, Broadway, Radio City, all that stuff. And we met and quite literally fell in love across the footlights because I could see him down in the orchestra pit, you know, flipping the pages of the score. And I thought, well, he's cute. I got to find out about him. Hmm? Well, soon we met. He's such an amazing guy. He's a man that's not afraid to talk. You know, I mean, he loves talk and to have conversation. He's way smarter than me. I mean, he has his doctorate in music and I have no college degrees, but I did go to 4 colleges in 2 years. I just didn't graduate from any of them. But we met and got married in 1983 when I left the tour. And then in March of 1984, we met the Lord. That in itself is an interesting story. But then a year later had our daughter and God just called us out of that world. You know, we were going in one direction and that's what I call a God dare. I didn't call it that at the time because I didn't understand that, but we were going in one direction, wanted to be famous and be on Broadway. And God, as we got to know him and read the word and listen to good teaching, we just both had that uneasy feeling that this is not the life God has chosen for us. And it didn't make sense because, you know, you work for years to build a career. We were doing well in New York. We were both working. It just didn't make any sense. But oftentimes when God dares you, it doesn't always make sense. But when you know it's the Lord, that's when it's time to obey.
Okay. So I need to break in here and tell our listeners that you've written a book called The God Dare.
Right.
And that is an interesting term, Kate. Tell us what you mean by God dare. What is a God dare?
God dare is just that crazy idea that God drops in your spirit that you're thinking, there's no way, God, I am completely not equipped to do this. This is way too far out of my comfort zone. And no, find somebody else. It's that kind of thing. I mean, for me, that was writing my first book, which came out in 2012. God told me to write a book. We'd given this talk to the homeschool organization we'd been part of with our daughter for a number of years, and they were having their big 20th anniversary, and they called me and said, by this time, Franny had signed a record deal, had music on the radio. You know, she's becoming known. So they called and said, would you and Mike come and talk about what did you do to raise your child to find her purpose and follow the Lord? And I said, sure, we'd love to come talk. And I hung up the phone and said, what the heck did we do? Because, you know, you're not really following a parenting manual. You're just raising your child to follow Jesus and love the Lord. And you hope you're not messing up too badly. But when Mike and I sat down and talked about it, we came up with 15 very intentional things we'd done to raise her. Just, you know, speaking truth and life and just very different than the way we were raised. So we gave our talk, we gave these 15 things. And the next day I was just praying and thanking God for those 15 things. And as soon as I said that, I heard the Lord speak clearly in my spirit and say, those are book chapters. Mm. And my first response was like, Lord, I'm not a writer. Do you remember that I didn't graduate college? I don't have an English degree. No one will publish it. People will think I'm crazy, like every excuse in the book. And I just kept hearing him say and impress on my spirit, those are book chapters. And it was so far outside of my comfort zone that, I mean, that's why I realized after that, I thought, you dared me, God. You were triple dog daring me to do something that I knew I was not equipped to do. But if God calls you to it, he'll equip you to do it. And I found a friend who was a writing coach, which I didn't even know existed. And I said, I showed her my thing. I said, tell me this is not a book. She said, no, it is. And you're going to write it and I'll help you. We'll get it published. We did. I mean, it all happened. I started thinking, okay, Lord, if you did this for me, I got to really look through scripture and see if you did this. And I see it all through scripture. In the book, I have 14 different biblical characters that I talk about, mixed in with a lot of memoir. And because I've had a very interesting life, a lot of ups, a lot of downs, a lot of good, bad, and broken. But you know, who hasn't? We all have had some things in our past that we're not proud of. But stepping out and writing it, I was, you know, when you take a God dare, you can then call yourself by another name. I can now say I'm an author, I'm a writer. I couldn't say that 10 years ago. 10 years ago, had you told me I was those things and a podcaster and a speaker, I'd have said, you're crazy. But you know, when you start stepping out, God will keep pushing you a little bit further. Do this. Now you've done that. You can do this. Try that thing that doesn't make sense and is crazy. But I just see it all through the scripture.
One of the things I love about you is your willingness to talk about the hard things. So when we met, it was at Raising Generations Today. We have a mutual friend, September McCarthy, who invited us both to come speak. And so I was listening to your story. And all I knew was that's Kate Battistelli. That's Francesca's mom. But what I didn't realize is that motherhood did not come easily to you. And no. You've battled through infertility and it took a long time to get to this place and a lot of grieving afterwards too. Can you tell us about that?
I can. We had a lot of infertility and failed adoptions and all that stuff. But what started a lot of this was when I was 18, I found out I was pregnant. I had just graduated from high school. I wasn't raised in the kind of home where you were told you can do anything and you're here to change the world and God has a plan for your life. I mean, we went to the Episcopal Church, but I did not have a saving relationship with Jesus. So I fell into a relationship with a boy I shouldn't have, but you know, I didn't have that kind of wisdom to say that's not smart. You need to wait till you're married. So at 18, I graduate college, find out I'm pregnant. And thought, well, this can't happen. I want to be a Broadway star. There's no way this doesn't fit in my life. Now, this is 1972. Yeah. This is before Roe v. Wade has been written into law. So abortion was legal in some places, but not everywhere. I lived in New Jersey. That's where I was raised. And abortion was not legal there, but it was in New York City. So I remember going to Planned Parenthood and just sitting down and asking the lady, you know, what do I do? She said, well, do you want to have the baby? And I thought, well, I can't. First of all, my parents would kill me. You know, I mean, just family-wise, that was that would not go over. Because back in those days, it was not acceptable. First of all, it wasn't acceptable to be sleeping with a boy when you weren't married. I mean, today it's kind of the norm that people live together and do all that stuff. But back then, it was still just taboo to do that. So being pregnant and not being married was not a cool thing. So I told her, no, I can't have the baby. She said, okay, she made me an appointment in New York at this clinic that did abortions back then. So I went in and I remember during the middle of the procedure, and this is hard for me now, but at the time I didn't fully understand it. But I remember the doctor with his soft French accent telling me that it's a good thing you came in when you did because you're just on the cusp of 4 months. And had you waited one more week, I wouldn't have been able to do this procedure. Hmm. So at the time, I was just glad he could do it. But I didn't know. There was no ultrasound in 1972. I didn't know what a four-month-old baby looked like or what this procedure did to that child. You know, I mean, I'll know I'll see this child in heaven and I'll ask deep forgiveness. But I went through with it and then just went on with my life. I didn't talk about it for 46 years. I mean, when I spoke at RGT back 3 or 4 years ago, I was not telling the story. Yep. It was not till last summer when God dared me to put it in my book to say, you need to write this chapter. You need to tell the world. You need to get beyond the guilt and the shame. I hadn't told my daughter till last year. Mm. She's 34 years old. I was so terrified of how she would respond. But of course, she was gracious and loves me and nothing changed. She just fully understood and forgave me. But until I got her permission, I didn't want to put it in the book because I didn't want anything in my life to embarrass her. She has a much more public life than I do. So I was concerned about that. But she was like, put it in the book. You need to tell this story. And especially women my age, they're in their 60s that are holding on to this guilt and shame that are afraid to tell anybody. But if you're holding on to it, I promise you, when you expose it and let it go, it loses its power.
1 in 3 women in America have had an abortion. That means that there are people that are listening today who are holding on to this guilt and this shame. I know that took a toll on you probably while you were facing infertility too. Tell us about that.
Well, and it also takes a toll on men. You know, we forget that one out of three men also have dealt with this. Now, sometimes men maybe didn't know, but a lot of men did know and promoted it and let their girlfriends or wives or whatever go through with it. So there's guilt on both sides. But yeah, when I was, we were able to have Franny pretty quickly. We got married in 83, had her in 85. So that worked out great. And I'm the crazy woman who wanted five kids. I thought, I want a big family, a big household. This will be great. I got pregnant again when she was about 2.5. I found out on a Friday, and by Monday, which was Labor Day, I started having horrible pain, just bent over in pain, didn't know what was going on, didn't know if it was gas. I didn't know what was happening, but it ended up being an ectopic or tubal pregnancy where the baby is growing inside the fallopian tube and it can't survive because there's no space for it. So the tube had burst and I was bleeding internally. And what's interesting is it's still one of the leading causes of maternal death because you don't know you're bleeding. You're just in pain. And you think, well, something's going on. Finally, I was able to get to the hospital and they removed everything. I lost that fallopian tube, lost the baby. I remember going down to Philadelphia where there was a fertility doctor down there and going for treatments that weren't working. And I remember asking him, saying, you know, would an abortion back when I was 18 have caused this? And he said, oh, absolutely. The scarring on the other tube, because I couldn't get pregnant again, that there was just no way. That tube was just, your fallopian tube's kind of like the fingers of your hand. Mine was like a fist. It just was scarred and ruined. And I realized in that moment that you reap what you sow. And I had sowed the wages of sin is death. It's, you know, it's a hard thing to face, but it's true. For me, that was true. And then we tried adoption. It kept falling through. Finally, I had to get it through my head that God was saying, look, you know, you're having one child. You're going to be the parents of an only. And I see it now. I mean, now I can look back and go, okay, that makes sense that with where God was taking our daughter, what he was wanting her to do in her life, she needed our full attention. Had we had five kids, it's not that we couldn't have managed it, but it just seems to make sense today. And especially for the parents of onlys, and there, I think it's like 20 or 25% of families have an only child. There's a specific purpose for that child. I mean, I'm certain, I mean, there is for every kid that's born on this planet. I think each of us is here to change the world. If we choose to, we have to choose to be chosen to change the world. But especially if it's an only child, really press into the Lord and ask him, what is this child on this planet to do? Because there's a reason.
Kate, I want to flesh this out for you. And we asked permission to talk about this too. But I imagine that there are women that are listening that are holding on to this shame. Yeah. And I just want to lean into that for a second. What would you say to her today?
I think it feels scarier than it is, than it will turn out to be. I didn't really reveal this till a year ago. My parents are both gone, so they never knew. I think I told my younger sister, but my older sister, none of my siblings know, though I don't know if they've read the book. We don't have a real close family, but we think it's going to be worse than it is, and people are going to judge us and say, how could you do that? And you're horrible, but they don't. People are very gracious when I tell this story, and I think of every chapter in the book, this is the one that most people appreciate because I have been able to be honest about it. And I didn't want to tell this story, but God dared me last summer. He just kept pressuring me and pushing me to put this in the book. So one day I just sat at my computer, said, dang it, I'm just going to write it all out. So I was mad, but I wrote it. And then my husband read it and he was in tears and he said, you must put this in. And then I talked to Franny about it and she was perfectly fine. And it's hard to talk about, but it's important that we let other women know that we understand their struggle, that we've been there too. But you hold on to that guilt and shame. And when the biggest problem I see with doing that is it makes us think when God does call us or dare us, we think, you can't use me, God. I've messed up too much. But if you've given your heart to Jesus and you've repented, I mean, I knew that the moment I received the Lord that he knew what I'd done. But I also knew he forgave me. And that's the biggest thing. If God can forgive me, I can forgive myself. You know, and I want to be able to speak about this to encourage other women to just let go, whatever it is, whether it was abuse or whatever has happened to you. By talking about it and being open and honest, you're going to help somebody else. You're going to help them get through it, get through that struggle.
And Kate, I just, the language that we use in churches has to be laced with grace, especially as we're talking to mothers. You and I run in motherhood circles.
Right.
We need to let our conversations, yes, we are absolutely pro-life.
Oh, gosh,
without a doubt. But our conversations have to be laced with grace for one another in the middle of it, especially because many of us are carrying this shame within us. And Christ forgives us. Just this morning, I was reading in Matthew 7. It's the passage where it's like, judge not, lest you be judged. But it's like Jesus says, the same measure you use to judge others is the measure it will be reverse judged on you. And I mean, I know this is true for you. It's true for me. We want to be women who lavish grace because we bask in that grace.
Yeah, we have to offer that. And I mean, when you think that if you look through your church, one out of three. So there are many, many, many women that are dealing with this issue or have dealt with it or haven't dealt with it and are holding on to it. So it's just important that we're open and able to talk about it. Plus, I think it's good for the pro-life movement if we can honestly tell this is a horrible thing. This is a wrong, bad thing. This is not a choice. This is a child that we're talking about, you know, and I'm going to see that child in heaven. I know that child's there. The child that I lost through the ectopic pregnancy, I have babies in heaven. I don't have them here, but I have them there and I can't wait to meet them. And I mean, they don't have names that I've given them. God has names for them. So be brave. But if you're really afraid to talk about it, go to someone who you know has compassion and love.
Yeah.
Or you just tell the whole world. For me, it was just put it in the book. You just need to talk about it. It's part of your story. And I think that's why I thought I had written this book in 2012. I thought it was done. It was going to come right out after the God Dare. It took me 8 years till I was ready to speak truth. He was not ready to put this book out.
Well, we did an interview several years back where we talked about your book, Growing Great Kids, which is the one that you felt that initial God Dare with. I want to ask you about journeying into seeing your daughter pursue her purpose as well, because that's one of the greatest motherhood dares is maybe laying down some of your own dreams so that your child can walk in their own. What did that look like for you? How did this journey with Francesca begin?
I think when we laid aside the whole theater thing, God just started working on my heart to really press into him and dig deep to find out, what is she here for? I know she's on this planet for a reason, God. And as she got older and I kept not being able to have more babies, I knew, all right, there's something going on here. And it's interesting because what I wanted was fame and fortune, but I wanted it for myself. I didn't want it for the Lord. And it's interesting how our ceiling becomes our children's floor, how God said, no, not you, but it's the next generation, because she's doing it for the right reasons. She's making my name famous. Fame came to her. That wasn't anything she was seeking or we were seeking. I kind of had a feeling from the time she was pretty young that the arts was something that she was going to go into, because she was just, you know, dramatic and loved music and dance. So actually, I put her in dance for 12 years. She was in ballet and we thought, well, that's going to be it, because she's going to just be a prima ballerina. But she has some issues with her back. So that dream ended because she was not going to be able to dance to the level that she would need to. But she'd always been interested in music and theater. She and I did a little bit of dinner theater down in Florida, and she loved that, loved being on stage, started writing music. You know, just as the years went on, we really started to unpeel the layers of there is some real talent here. But I always advise parents, get outside corroboration of what you think your child's gifts are. Get somebody else to tell you they're good, because we all think our kids are brilliant, you know, and they're the best at this and they're so great. But you want to get somebody else to say, yes, they're talented. You don't want to be like those early American Idols where these moms just thought their kids were so great and they couldn't hold a tune. So, you know, we got that. We got lots of corroboration to say, okay, and then just invested in lessons and exposing her to things that were good, that would get her on that path. And we just helped her navigate, because we had been in the arts, not in Christian music, but we understood that world. So we were able to help her navigate as she grew and grew and grew in her faith and in her gifting and started performing more and doing all that stuff. And then just sort of let the Lord open the doors. We always laid all this out to God. It was never, you know, she needs to be famous and win a Grammy. It's interesting that I think if you are really pressing in for your kids, God will start to show you things. He'll give you little glimpses early on that'll make you go, all right, I need to really pray about that or move in that direction. Because I remember when Franny was 16, we would always watch all the award shows, the Tonys and the Grammys and all that stuff. We're watching the Grammys. She's 16. And I said, I just came in my brain. I said, Franny, I don't know what to tell you. You're going to be up there one day. And my husband's like, don't put that in her head, because if it doesn't come to pass. But he was showing me almost 10 years earlier what was coming for her. So I just started praying. You know, God will show parents stuff. It's not something you necessarily want to share with the world and tell everybody, my child's going to win a Grammy one day. But I just started praying about it. I kind of tucked it in my back pocket and thought, all right. And then, you know, when her second single, Free to Be Me, came out, that was nominated for a Grammy. It was 8 years later, but you just don't know what God has up his sleeve. But we have to be willing, I think, as parents, to dream big for our children, to take a God dare for them in a way, to say, okay, God, if that's where you're calling them. And not every child's going to be called to that kind of big visible life. She is. It's not maybe her favorite thing. I think she'd rather probably be a worship leader in a church somewhere and just sort of fade into the background. But God said, nope, you're out front. And I think because she has that humble attitude toward it, it's not, hey, it's all about me and I'm famous. She goes to the grocery store just like everybody else. She changes diapers. Her kids scream in a restaurant, throw a fit, and it's fine. It's a normal person.
Kate, how do we discern if we've heard what we think we've heard from the Lord in regards to what you're calling a God dare? How do we start to discern if this is like us going, I think I'd like to have this, versus right, I think this may be what God has for me?
Well, you've got to really pray. And I always think it's good to get other people to pray with you, people that you trust, your pastor, maybe your pastor's wife, whoever you know is a mature Christian. Tell them your idea. Say, am I crazy? Get them to pray with you and for you, and take time. You don't have to necessarily jump into it. It may take 6 months. It may take 6 years. Who knows? I mean, Moses waited 40 years in the desert before God dared him, before God said, you're the one I've chosen to take Israel out of Egypt and turn them into a nation and do all that stuff. It doesn't always come quickly, but sometimes it does. But I think you just need to get some, you want to get confirmation. You never want to just step out, because it could be the enemy. I say in the book that Jesus and the devil both have a plan for your life. But prayer, more than anything, is going to help us determine, is that God speaking to me, or is that just last night's pizza, you know, or some crazy idea, or somebody else is doing it, so maybe I could do it too. Pray, get confirmation, get other people to pray with you. And I think then if you really feel, okay, all the boxes are checked, step out. It will still be scary. It will still be outside your comfort zone, but that's where you step out of possible into the impossible. Mm. And I always say the impossible is God's comfort zone.
I know you believe this is true, but because it's all through your book, but God's not going to lead us in a way that is not according to his word. This is going to be in harmony, but Isaiah 43 says that we were created for God's glory. So most often our God dares are going to have something to do with his glory wrapped up in the middle of it, right?
Oh, it has to. I mean, if it's not for his glory, what's the point? But it can be simple. Sometimes it's a big world-changing thing, or it's, you know, write a book or start a podcast. Sometimes it's just go across the street and talk to those Muslim neighbors. Be loving to them, or your gay neighbors, or your child who just came to you and told you something about their life that you still need to love them and show them grace and show them mercy. It can be as simple as the lady behind you in the grocery store whose kids are screaming, and that you can give them that encouragement. Some God dares you don't need to pray about. Sometimes it's just get out of your comfort zone, get out of your house, and go do what you know is the right thing. But I think we're just in America, the American church, where we are comfortable. Life is nice for most of us. We have our house and our jobs and our cars. And it's like, I don't need to bother about anybody else. I'm good. But God's saying, no, you need to bother about them. They need to hear who I am. They need to see through your life and the way you love, not necessarily shoving the Bible down their throat or giving them a tract, but just being Jesus, taking a meal to the brand new mom on your street, you know, doing those things. Then you can open up a way to maybe have conversation.
How do we balance motherhood and the dreams that God's placed on our hearts? I know all the time people are like, I would really like to do that, but I'm a mom. What do you have to say to those women?
Well, sometimes it's just timing.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got little ones, that is your role. You are supposed to be home with them or be a major part of raising them. It doesn't mean you still can't have a job or a side hustle, as they say, but timing is everything. And I think it's just praying and asking the Lord, when is the right time for this? Because he might have something for you. But for me, it was after my daughter was out of the house and moved to Nashville. I wrote a blog post years ago called Motherhood, the After Party. Because when she left, you know, she was an only child. I did not know what to expect. Nobody told me that when they leave, it's really hard. You know, that last one goes, or for me, it was the only one. It was like, well, now what do I do? I spent 18, 20 years raising this child. What the heck am I supposed to do now? And God reminded me, he said, you know, mother is not your only name. Mm. There are other things that you can do. So sometimes it's just a matter of there's a season for being at home with the kids. And then there's a season where he's going to take you into all these other things. And now I have two books out. I'm a podcaster, which made no sense, but you know, it happened. And I speak and I do this stuff. And it's a whole nother world that the Lord's opened up to me. But it was in his right timing. Just because I want something doesn't mean it's the right time for it. So it's that again, you just have to pray and say, Lord, is this for 10 years from now? Or am I supposed to be pursuing this now? Because you can be a mom with kids at home. If they're, the finances are there and everything is working out fine and God's saying, hey, start this or do that. There's plenty of young moms that write books and speak and do things, but we need the wisdom of the Lord. And the, again, get some other mature Christians to pray and say, is this the time I'm supposed to step out or should I wait? Because I'm convinced God is all about timing.
And it's just like you said, God dares don't mean that you're going to be looking for a platform. It may mean that you're the classroom mom at your kids' Absolutely. Schools or the one who's hosting the slumber parties and inviting other kids in.
Yeah. I mean, I say that the last chapter of the book is about the greatest God dare of all, which is living like Christ. If Christians would actually be Christian and do the things Jesus said, like turn the other cheek, allow someone to offend you, you know, forgive, even if they're big jerks and they don't deserve forgiveness, but it doesn't matter. We are called to forgive. We're called to not judge. You know, all those things that Jesus talks about in the Sermon on the Mount, just everything he said, everything Jesus says to me is a God dare because it challenges me. We had an incident with a financial thing where someone really hurt us. And it took me a couple years till finally God was like, you have to let go of this. Because if you don't, I'm not going to be able to use you in the way I want to. And I had to really, truly forgive that person, get to that point where I could truly say, you know what? I have no ill feelings. I can let them go and move on with my life. It took a while though. I mean, and sometimes it does. But if we could just live like Christ, it would change the world. If we would actually do it. But it's hard.
Well, I think that's a mic drop, Kate. Honestly, if we would live like Christ, I mean, that's the biggest God dare of all.
Yeah, really, it is.
Friend, I know that we've got women that are listening right now who are like, yeah, I have this thing that I feel like God nudging me to do. As we wrap up our time together, would you pray for her?
Oh, sure. I would love to. Yeah, Lord, I just thank you so much, God. I thank you for the women that are listening, Lord, and for the ones that are getting that nudge from you, God. And I just ask that you would speak clearly to her, Lord, that you would let her know beyond the shadow of a doubt that this is or is not your will for her, God, that you will give her confirmation, that you will give her a little team around her to just help her pray through whatever it is she feels like you're nudging her to do. God, it could be big, it could be small, whatever it is though, Lord, I know that it's world changing because that's just how you are with us. You want us to change the world. You put us here for a reason. And God, I pray you would give her the courage to step out once she knows for sure that it's your will. Give her the help and the support that she needs. We ask God that you would keep the enemy far from her and that you would just give her the wisdom to know what your will is and the courage to step out and do it. In Jesus' mighty name, amen.
Amen. Kate, we're so grateful at Moms in Prayer for you. Go ahead and tell Francesca for us. We're so grateful that it's her voice that we hear on Christian radio all the time.
I will.
I love jamming out with my kids to her, well, her station on Spotify.
Alrighty.
So fun. Kate, we're going to include all the links in the show notes, but I want to encourage our friends. They're going to relate so much to your stories and the God Dare and to go ahead and pick up a copy of that.
You know, there's a way, if it's okay to mention this, to get the first three chapters for free.
Well, it's always okay to give something for free.
Okay. Well, they can just text God Dare, all one word, G-O-D-D-A-R-E, to 44144. They get the foreword by Franny, the introduction, the first three chapters. And that way you can, you know, see if you like it before you invest in it.
That's such a good thing. Well, thanks, Kate, for being here.
You betcha. Thanks, Lee.
Is God calling you into a dare for His glory and your family's best? I can't wait to hear what you're thinking about after today's episode, so jump online and leave us a comment. We are Moms in Prayer and Leaning Heist across every social media platform. A couple of quick things. One, jump on our website and join a Moms in Prayer group if you aren't in a group. Today is the day to join us in fighting for the next generation in prayer. And you can find that prayer community you've been longing for. You'll also find our show notes and ways to connect with today's guests. Also, would you share this episode with a friend now? It's easy to click share and send it in a text to a friend who may be dealing with some of the issues we talked about today. The last thing is, would you consider giving in this month of November? It's so easy to give to the life-changing ministry of Moms in Prayer and help us continue to see every school in the world covered in prayer. Jump on the website or text the word STEWARD to 41444. It's so easy, you guys. That's the word STEWARD to 41444. We love being on this vital mission of motherhood with you. Be sure to tell us what you are thankful for this November on the hashtag Moms in Prayer. We're watching. Moms are making the difference. Moms taking great big God dares. Moms just like you. See you next week.